Getting you ready for today's game with the Wade Ford Tailgate Show.
A complete look around the NFL and especially our Falcons.
Let's go out there and compete. Let's focus in on what our job is and do our job.
The Wade Ford Tailgate Show, brought to you by Wade Ford, Atlanta's Ford dealer.
This is the Wade Ford Tailgate Show.
On the home for our Falcons, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Now, here's Andy Bunker and Joe Patrick.
Good morning. Welcome in. Wade Ford Tailgate Show here with you live from Centennial Yards, the bridge over Centennial Yards, the steel bridge. Andy Bunker, Smokey Joe Patrick with you from now until 11 o'clock this morning. And unfortunately, the finish line is in sight. The final Wade Ford Tailgate Show of the season. No playoffs for the Falcons this year, unfortunately, but still a lot at stake today, which we'll get into over the course of the show, to be sure. But good morning to you, Joe. How are you?
It's hate week, or it's hate day.
No doubt.
For the Falcons going against the Saints. I mean, you never want to see the Saints come into this city or this building and win a football game. So definitely hoping the Falcons pull one out, but I'm doing well, Andy. You know, this is actually probably the best weather I've ever had for doing a Wade Ford Tailgate Show in the last game of the season. Been through some pretty brutal ones, some real cold snaps, and it's a really nice day today.
It's a lot better than it was on Monday night. Boy,
yes, was
that cold.
That was
when we took the air on Monday for the Monday Night Football game against the Rams. The wind was just whipping through this thing. Because, like, where we are in Centennial Yards is I mean, it's on top of the train tracks. I mean, the train track runs right through here. So it's like a little valley. And, I don't know, this is a wind tunnel. So the tent was blowing over. Looks like they got that taken care of. The tent we had last time, remember, the leg broke.
Was it crazy windy when you got near the building, too? I don't know what reason this happens, but it
feels
like when you get close to Mercedes-Benz Stadium, it's like there's like a whirlpool of wind or something that's just going around.
By the time I got to the stadium on Monday, I was unaware of the elements.
Six sheets of the wind. how about the Falcons, though, putting on a show on Monday night? You know, just kind of, you know, when everybody thought they were done for, they were going to kind of lay down, they go out there and show us who they can be, which is, you know, playing with some of the best teams in the NFL.
I like that you stopped yourself and because you almost said show us who they really are.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Because who they really are is both, unfortunately,
exactly,
right? I mean, that's what it is. It's been one of the more bipolar performances from a team that I've ever seen, certainly that I've ever covered. Like, I can't. I mean, I've covered bad football teams. I've covered good football teams, and this is both.
Yeah.
Like, I can't remember a season where a team lost by 30, 28, and 27 and still had wins like this team has, and still they're going to be right around 500 if they win today. They're at 8-9, which is the same place they were last year. Crazy enough. Like, that's the crazy thing about these 17-game schedules is – they're so long. There's so many different ways to get to that number.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, I mean, if the Falcons win today, three different ways that three teams in the NFC South got to that exact same number. But, yeah, then at the same time, like you said, I mean, the way that they played that Monday night against the Bills will forever be confusing to me because that was you know, just a couple weeks removed from that performance against Carolina. Now, it was off of a bye, and they had an extra day, so maybe that was a part of it. I don't know. I mean, the Bills are also flawed. We get it, but they're a pretty good team.
Mm-hmm.
And then to follow it up with the next 2 months. I mean, that's the thing that's so confusing with that. But then to come out on Monday and play the way they did against the Rams was impressive again. They're up 21-0 at halftime. The defense gave Matt Stafford as hard of a time as he's had against anyone this year.
Yep.
Similar to what you could have said about the defense and Josh Allen that Monday night where they beat the Bills. Bijan Robinson continues to be just, an absolute dynamo.
Yeah.
Like, he's just, every time he has the ball in his hands, he might score. He went 91 to score on Monday. And then they held on in the end because,
yep.
I mean, it was 24-3, and then it was 24-24, and they did something that they've rarely done this year, which is come up with plays late and win the game at the end. And, again, I don't know. I'm thankful that I'm not the one making the decision on what happens
right.
after today
yeah.
because it's so easy to make arguments on both sides.
Uh-huh.
Now, I think it's easier to make arguments on, okay, that's cool, but we're not in the playoffs for the eighth straight year. And
yep.
at one point we were 4-9, so,
yep.
you know. But who knows?
Yeah, you know, and just to kind of go back to these games, I think there's a lot of similarities between how the Falcons played against the Bills and Rams, both on Monday nights. Both kind of highlighted, as you said, by Bijan Robinson,
yep.
just kind of showing the world, you know,
yep.
when you're long on Monday touchdown Night Football, runs too. You're on that national stage, and long touchdowns, long explosive touchdowns, which was actually, I don't know if a knock on him is the right way to say it, but it's something that he wanted to improve, which always sounds weird when you're going through training camp. Like, yeah, I want to have more 60-yard touchdown runs.
Yeah.
And certainly, surely enough, he's been able to do it.
Now, I remember we talked about that at training camp because that came up a couple times, like from him and, like, coaches. They're like, really what he's working on is trying to hit the home run and break. And I was like, yeah, I get it. Like, that's – you have to be up there already for that to be something that you worked on in your offseason.
Right.
Like, most guys are like, I'm just trying to pick up the blitz.
Right, yeah.
Or, like, you know, put on a couple extra pounds of muscle or work on this route. Bijan's like, yeah, no, I'm pretty much great at all that other stuff. I'm trying to, when I get 30 yards downfield, make that last guy miss, and then I can go 70 yards downfield.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's legit because he had been caught a number of times in his first couple of years with that home run in sight, one tackler to beat. He's beating them this year.
Yeah, so it just goes to show what an amazing athlete and player he is. But the other thing that is kind of characteristic about these games is that defense, like you mentioned, them getting after both Josh Allen, who they had down to one of the worst games of his career at that point in time, and then they did something similar to Matthew Stafford, you know, picking him off multiple times, which he'd only thrown 5 interceptions. Coming all season, coming into that game. So a really impressive effort, especially toward the end. I mean, both of these games, I remember, because I use my barometer as just like the text messages I get from friends and family. And I remember in both these games, I'm getting texts like, Falcons going to blow this, because this is what they do. And they didn't do it in either of those occasions. And what has, you know, gotten the Falcons to where they are, you know, on the outside looking in of the playoff picture and not capable of making it this year is the just getting stomped by Carolina, by Miami at home. That's the kind of thing that you cannot have happen to you if you consider yourself a successful team, if you consider yourself, you know, a playoff team, which is obviously where this team wants to be. And that, to me, is where, you know, when we talk about these decisions that are going to be made after this game and in probably the 24 hours, you know, after the final whistle blows here, that's where I think these decisions really need to be focused in on.
Yeah, I mean, yes, 100%. And there's been a lot of conversation since Monday and kind of throughout the weekend leading into this morning about, well, what's the loss that kind of did it? Because if they win today, again, for anybody that might not know, if the Falcons win today, they get to 8-9. And with Carolina losing to the Bucks last night, they're both at 8-9. So the Falcons would be technically in a three-way tie for first place in the division if they win today.
Which means any other game that they lost this year, win it and they'd be in.
Right, which means any of those games was technically the backbreaker. I think the one that really stands out is because, look, as say what you want to say about Carolina, and you shouldn't lose 30-0 to anybody in the NFL if you're worth anything. But Carolina is the team that wins the division if the Falcons win today, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they're at the very least comparable and a capable football team.
Sure.
The loss of the Jets.
Yeah, the Jets.
The Jets loss is the one that, to me, stands out as the least acceptable.
Yeah.
And there's a couple because of just sort of late game mistakes and things like that. But, you know, again, we're ranking Falcons losses, so we're already doing this. Like, I'm not trying to, like,
right.
You know what I mean? Like,
because
I can already hear people being like, well, I mean, how are you saying this? Or you're going to give credit for that? No, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
What we're doing is ranking the 9 losses that they have right now. So we're already having a terrible conversation, okay?
Well,
but I'm just saying the other blown games that were late game, whatever it is, bad decisions or bad special teams or
exactly
whatever.
What
like there were drops. There's a lot of different stuff. You know, the Colts at that time were a very good team. The Patriots are one of the best teams in the AFC. Like they came against teams that can do that to people.
Mm-hmm.
The Jets are awful.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was the
and they
one.
They were awful.
They
in
were
that game.
Awful.
I mean, they had Tyrod Taylor.
They've been awful since.
Yep.
But for that one day, because for whatever reason, that's what the Falcons have been every game, pretty much outside of the Seahawks, Dolphins, and Panthers. They're at the level of their competition. That to me is the most damning thing.
Yeah.
Is to play to the level of competition and show that you have the capability to play up to it and beat the Rams and the Bills, who might be the Super Bowl matchup.
Right.
Wouldn't shock anybody if those are the two teams in the Super Bowl. But then also have the capability to play down to the level of competition of the Jets and teams like that. That I don't know how you can square that.
Well, and you know, is kind of it was just a mixture of emotions coming off of that Rams game where, you know, Xavier Watts having a breakout game and kind of putting his stamp as being, I put it out there on Twitter kind of half jokingly, but being the best, you know, rookie defensive back for the Falcons since Deion Sanders, and he matched his
interception total. Yeah. People liked that.
I mean, they're second in the NFL in sacks. Like, you know, Bijan Robinson is incredible and setting a, you know, franchise record in yards. You have all this stuff going for you, but you're outside, you're not going to make the playoffs. And why? It's, you know, part of what
Falcons.
You're just talking about, that playing down the level of your competition, but it's also that special teams. You know, it's also the special teams that has foiled you over and over again this season. Even in some of the wins, they've almost been undone, like on Monday night, by a special teams calamity. And how does that figure into the decision-making? Is that on Raheem Morris? Is it on – do you just kind of put it on the special teams coordinator? Is it on Terry Fontenot getting the right guys there?
Yeah.
You know, the kicking situation coming into this year can be questioned. So there's a whole lot of decisions that have to be debated.
Let's do that and all of the rumors that – or I won't even say rumors because they're reported by insiders.
Yep.
Diana Rossini and people that are respected in the NFL. Mm-hmm. We'll do those in about 10 minutes in the second segment, because I do think that they're kind of like Monday in our second segment when we did the Matt Ryan reports, which all might tie together, by the way, if you kind of start connecting dots a little bit.
Yep.
But we'll get there in about 10 minutes. The question that I had leading into today's game, again, like in a vacuum, all you can do today on Sunday is beat your rival at home in front of your fans.
Right.
Do that.
Right.
Do that. Then you're 2-0 against the Saints this year. That's something that feels okay, right? You feel good about that. There's going to be a bunch of Falcons fans in the building because there always are. I don't know how full it's going to be, whatever. But there's going to be a lot of people in there cheering for the Falcons to win this football game today. So go out and do that and give people something to be happy about today. And get to 8-9, and that would mean Carolina makes the playoffs. Fine. I don't really care one way or the other which one of those teams makes the playoffs. The Falcons aren't making it. But I just – whenever there's a potential outcome and the Falcons are involved in one way or the other, I always think to myself, like, what's the most Falcon way of this playing out?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know if winning today and being in a three-way tie for first place – on the outside looking in because of tiebreakers, is the most, or is it losing to the Saints, having the Saints finish above you in the division, and by tiebreaker, technically getting the fourth place, last place schedule going into next year, and like coming short on the final day of the season? I don't know. I'm not sure. I think if the Falcons were eligible for the playoffs today, then that would be the most Falcon result.
Yes.
But because they don't actually have any impact on their own playoff future, I'm not sure which.
I think it's the former, I'm sorry, because that would be the most kind of ironic of situations where you finish tied with the best record in the division
and still don't
make
the playoffs.
You know, ostensibly would have been your objective coming into the season, but obviously that objective requires going to the playoffs.
I will say this. If that happens and I hear any person that works up there, say we were in first place in the division in a serious way in an attempt to justify anything.
Yeah.
I'm not going to like that very much.
Yeah. Well, I think that we're going to hear from.
I'm not going to really enjoy that framing of the narrative.
I have to imagine we're going to be hearing from the brass at Flower Branch, whether that's Arthur Blank specifically or others, other key decision makers. Within the next 24 to 48 hours, I would imagine.
Yeah, you would think. The flip side of that is, and me and Randy always talk about this, is like, if you're not doing anything, you don't have to make an announcement, right? They're
true.
All under contract.
Yeah.
Like, if they just are going to...
Just some nice, quiet, idle while everybody's just waiting like, for the bat signal.
What do you guys... What? We don't have anything to tell you.
Gonna try harder next year.
Yeah, we're just gonna do our best. We finished tied for first place. What are you talking about?
Don't speak it into existence.
We have nothing. We don't have anything to say. And then, like on Wednesday, there'll be a brief press release of like, everybody's coming back. What are you guys so worked up about? No, I don't think that will happen.
Yeah.
We talked a lot about it on Friday on the show, just about like, you know, does today's outcome have much of an impact on what happens afterward, in as far as that decision goes. I really don't think that it does. I mean, I guess there's...
I hope it does not.
I hope not to.
You know, it shouldn't.
It may be just a speck, because it is a data point,
right?
It is a game.
Sure.
I also saw this yesterday, too, which was a great point. It's like, for all the hand-wringing and yelling about how stupid the College Football Playoff Committee is, a playoff spot in the NFL today will be decided by a team that's not in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's
right?
True. Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
so
it will be.
Even this one, which is just based on math, is also a little bit dumb.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
You have to have a little bit of dumb sprinkled in there. That's what makes it exciting.
Exactly,
you know?
Man. We can't all be perfect in analytics all the time.
Yeah.
AI will fix all that at some point, and then it'll all be perfect.
Exactly.
We'll see how much we like it.
Exactly.
For now, let's just have dumb playoff rules,
like
tiebreakers.
I like having some bad team. Like what will happen this year is like some 8-9 team is like hosting a playoff game against a much better team, obviously.
But yeah, like, some incredibly good team has to go to Charlotte or
yeah,
or Tampa.
Yeah.
It sucks. All right, we'll come back. We'll get into some of those reports that have been out there over the last couple of days about what the Falcons may do going forward. Obviously, we will get into today's matchup today between the Falcons and the Saints as well, as the Falcons have a chance to get to 8-9. I mean, honestly, against all odds, a month ago, you never would have thought that would be possible. But they could be right back where they were at the end of the season last year. Different path in getting there, but 8-9 is what they were last year too, which is, by the way, it's better than they were with Arthur Smith.
That's right.
So, improving. Plateauing.
The most technical way possible.
That close. First place, Joe, on the line. All right, we'll be right back on the Wade Ford Tailgate Show. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Go Falcons.
Back to Andy Bunker and Joe Patrick and the Wade Ford Tailgate Show. Brought to you by Wade Ford, Atlanta's Ford dealer. On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Wade Ford Tailgate Show with you here on a Sunday morning. Smoking Joe Patrick and Andy Bunker. Show's brought to you by Baron Burton's W Sauce. We can't control the score, but you can still bring home the W. W Sauce is your ticket to next level flavors on game day. Pick up a bottle today and bring home the W. Falcons and Saints, week 18. Unfortunately, the final stop on the train for the Falcons this year. But still an opportunity to go 2-0 against your rival, an opportunity to get to 8-9. And there's a lot of individual stuff that could happen today as well with Bijan putting up crazy numbers, James Pierce Jr. still with the double-digit sack.
Yeah, some individual accolades to
total,
chase today.
Yeah, in sight. And, yeah, and some other numbers as well, which we can get to throughout the show. We did have one of the listeners hit me up on Twitter and say, you guys are talking about if the Falcons win, the Panthers go to the playoffs. The Falcons lose, the Bucs go to the playoffs. What happens if there's a tie? Which that might actually be the most Falcon outcome.
Right.
I forgot that possibility in the little choose-your-own-adventure story we were doing in the opening segment. In that case, then the Bucs would go to the playoffs because if the Bucs need the Falcons to just not win. They need the Falcons to just not win. The Panthers need the Falcons to win in order for the three-way tie to go their way. If the Falcons don't win the game, then they don't get that eighth win, in which case there would not be a three-way tie, and then the Bucs would go to the playoffs. So the Bucs are sitting at home today, rooting for either the Falcons to lose or tie, and the Panthers obviously are rooting for the Falcons to win. And in that case, I think then the Falcons would finish
Atlanta
with the
would be third place
schedule.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I know Mike Conte had a tweet out there last night about kind of the different outcomes and what that would mean schedule-wise. If the Falcons win today...
Schedule's kind of nice if they get the last place schedule.
Exactly. I know there's no there's no kind of first round draft pick positioning for a win or a loss or anything like that, because obviously the Rams have the Falcons first round draft pick next year. But if they lose, then they get the fourth place, the last place schedule, and the last place schedule has.
So the third place schedule is likely going to be the Chiefs, Rams, and Cowboys.
Okay. That would be if they win today.
Third place schedule.
That's because
you know, Rams have been an amazing division, and Kansas City obviously had a down year.
Yeah.
Kansas City might not be the team they are, you know, normally next year
if they're without
Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
But still, if you get the last place, which is what you're asking for, you get the Raiders, the Cardinals, and the Giants. Now, those are winnable games right there.
I'll say this. This year's Falcons team would much rather have played the third place schedule.
That's a great point.
Because this year's Falcons team plays great against teams that are good.
And they literally...
If the Falcons played the Raiders this year, they would definitely have lost to the Raiders this year.
Yeah, I was going to say, I guess they've only played one of those teams and did beat them, but...
Who was the Cardinals. They did beat the Cardinals, that's true. Yeah, I mean, look, a little tongue-in-cheek there, but not really. Like, the Falcons, like we talked about in the first segment, have played up to or down to their level of competition this year. And look, that's just something to think about for next year. I mean, that's all sort of, it's important, but not that important. It's not the most important thing in the world, but something that is a part of the outcome today as well. Is NFL schedules based on where you finish in your division. You get a first place schedule, second place schedule, third place, last place, all that. And the last place schedule tends to be more favorable. And there has been some research done over the last couple of years of like teams that go from worst to first or third to first that play that third or fourth place schedule. It is pretty beneficial.
Really?
Like,
interesting.
You end up playing worse teams, right?
Yeah.
So, but the problem again is, I think you told me this a couple weeks ago. I don't know how it's changed now that they've played the Rams since then. The Falcons had the 28th easiest schedule in the NFL. I guess not 28th hardest. They had the fourth easiest schedule in the league this season, and here we are. So, you got to handle your own business before you can worry about all that other stuff. And that brings us to handling your own business. The Falcons are going to play a game at 1 o'clock today. By about 4:15, that game will be over.
And then they handle business.
And then they start to really make decisions, if they haven't already made them, about what happens next. And if you read reports from various high-level NFL insiders, there are some rumblings that the Falcons may continue on with Raheem Morris as their head coach, but without Terry Fontenot as their general manager, which – in like all of the different like tentacles of possibility of what happens next, all the different forks at the road, that one to me kind of seemed like the least likely. But again, maybe that makes it the most Falcons.
To me, in just kind of reading fan sentiment that I see, that feels like the least desirable or one of the less desirable outcomes of the decisions that get made after this game, because I think, especially coming off that Rams game, the sentiment from a lot of people was, look how talented this team is. Look how great of players that we have. If we could only play consistent, if we could only play games without having these special teams errors, we would be where we want to be. And that, to me, would signal that you actually have a GM that has put together a talented enough roster, but it's really been the coaching staff that has not gotten them to play consistently week to week that has gotten you to the place where you want to be. So so if the Falcons go – but at the same time, you know, Terry Fontenot's been here for 5 years. Like, how many GMs can go – into a sixth year with a team having never made the playoffs before? Like, that just doesn't happen either. So
I don't know how many times ever. I mean, I can't imagine very often. I mean, maybe you have a six-year run in the middle or a five-year run in the middle of a tenure, but even still, five years.
I can't think of when it would have happened.
Teams in the NFL don't go 5 years, let alone 8 years without jumping up and blipping their way into the playoffs once.
Yeah.
Like, Falcons are the second longest playoff drought in the league for a reason.
Yeah, the league is designed for you to be able to come back. Look at what the Colts are doing this year before Danny Jones got injured.
Exactly. No, I mean, it's a hard league to have a drought like that, let alone to be a general manager who has not done it. Because again, if you get a 5 year leash, normally it comes, or a 6 year, if you get a sixth year on that, that's because there was a 5 year run at some point earlier in your tenure. Even like with Thomas Dimitroff at the end there, like there was plenty of argument for moving on from Thomas Dimitroff, and still they waited, and it was a hard decision for him because at a couple different times during his tenure, the team was really good. I mean, he put together a roster that went to the Super Bowl and damn near won it. So. He had a little bit more.
It made some great
credit
calls,
to his name.
You know, trading for Julio Jones.
Sure. The point is, he had a little bit more built up credit. Terry Fontenot, they haven't had a winning season.
Right.
And look, I understand. Again, this is like ranking Falcons losses. It's like, all right, who's more to blame for this season going the way that it went? Here's the problem that I have with that, or with if that's the decision they make, or any decision that's not, all right, let's hard reset, start over, or give everybody another chance. Because after a loss, any loss, it's on everybody, right? Anytime you're talking about, oh, the Falcons didn't get it done today, well, it's probably
not Bijan, but everybody else.
Yeah, but it's on everybody, though. Bijan could have done more, too. It's on everybody because it's, you know, the football speak. Like, you have to say the most boring thing possible in season.
Right.
But then if the general manager gets fired and the coach doesn't, then it's not on everybody. It's on him. Right? Like that.
Yeah, that is what that signals.
And I know that, you know, what they say in press conferences on Sundays and Mondays and Wednesdays is not what they always do, obviously. They're not going to tell us what they're always going to do. It just seems like nonsense if that's such a that's such a hallmark of accountability, of like, oh, and we're all in it together, and we win as a team, we lose as a team, everybody's blah, blah, blah. But then the season's over, and it didn't go the way that you wanted it to, and it's like, well, we got to fire that guy, but not this guy.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
What do you mean?
Which then makes you think, like, what were you saying earlier? Were those just words? You know, like,
and they were.
Yeah. Right? Yes.
And
yeah,
they were, which is why we always say you don't have to listen to what they say in press conferences, because they're just trying to make things better, right?
Yeah.
Like, nothing can be made better in a press conference. It can only be made worse,
right?
And you know, all the stuff they say is blah blah blah. Right? We talk about this all the time. This is my problem with it. Is like, we're gonna pin it on one. Like, the team was good enough in the games, like roster wise, when they beat the Bills and the Rams. They were good enough to be tied with the Colts going into overtime. They were good enough to be within one of the Patriots at the end of the game. They're, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
the roster was competitive. And then decisions were made, and maybe the players that were on the field weren't good enough to make the plays. All right, maybe. Maybe that's what it was. To me, it feels like it was a total group shortcoming, failure, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. I think it's
I guess Terry's done it five times, and Raheem's only done it twice, so you make him pay for it.
I guess, you know, and I think that would be part of the reasoning. You know, I'm right there with what you just said, which is that, you know, I think that there are mistakes that both Raheem have made and that Terry have made, you
absolutely.
Know, and they're both, you know,
and they've both done something as well.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And so, but, you know,
it's easier for me to come up with a list of things Terry's done well, though.
I agree. I think that, you know, ultimately, though, this organization, I think, needs a clean sweep might be too strong, but I don't know. I just feel like they need a real kind of overhaul in terms of who's leading this team. I got to say, there was one anecdote I'll share with Raheem that really worried me, which was a question that I asked him coming off of that loss they had to the Colts in Berlin, where I asked him why they chose to receive in overtime. Because it's just strategically not the correct thing to do,
right,
with the way that the modern rules are. And the answer he gave me was not, like, I think that he didn't know, or he wasn't prepared strategically for what that decision was at the time. And I think that that speaks to a larger sentiment of the players not being put in a position to succeed by the coaches. And I think you could, you know, make an argument that, you know, Terry Fontenot has a role to play in that as well.
I do too. I mean, I think that for a team to be 8-9 2 years in a row is on everybody. And again, that's what they always say. And that's
what
they
was built to win.
What they would say publicly too.
Yeah.
But then when it comes time to try to, you know, be here for another year, and if you can't both be here for another year, then you have to start making, like, well, no, it was really him, actually.
Yeah.
He was the guy. And to be fair, I mean, Terry Fontenot's a general manager that brought back Younghoe Koo and didn't bring in real competition in the summer
and let
that be a major part of the failings of the early season.
Right.
That's on everybody.
And again, in my mind, it's like they fired Arthur Smith in 2023 because he didn't make the playoffs when they felt he should have.
Yeah.
Now this happened twice since, you know, with teams that are ostensibly more qualified to make the playoffs,
right,
with players who have been in the league
supposed
longer
to be better rosters.
Yeah.
So
major investment into these rosters by Arthur Blank, that is just not reaping rewards.
I will say, like we said off the top, I'm glad I don't have to make the choice. Glad I don't have to make the decision.
Same. So I don't know if there's any decision or series of decisions they can make that's going to just quell all of the...
No, because there's no way to prove that it will.
Right.
I mean, I think the thing that would make most fans, I don't even know if this is true, so there's probably a lot of people out there that'll disagree with what I'm about to say, but I think the thing that would make the most people happy would be starting over with all of it.
Is
new front office people, new coaching staff, all of that. But there's also no guarantee that that's going to work.
I agree. You know, yeah.
It's
it feels
hard.
Good at the time.
It's hard to start from zero with that. But
The
roster will still be okay, whatever you think about the roster. There's some good parts and some holes, but like, it's hard to start over with the whole football operation.
Yeah,
you know?
I agree. And that's, by the way, that's what I would prefer happen too, but...
If I was in charge, that's what I would do.
Yeah.
That's what I would do.
But like you're saying, like, there's no telling that that is just going to be the solution, even though it might be something that many people want.
Yeah. All right.
Future holds.
All right. We'll come back here on the Wade Ford Tailgate Show. We'll look around the rest of the league. The number one seed in the NFC was taken last night by the Seahawks in a hell of a performance over the 49ers.
They're a machine.
The Panthers and Bucks also played a game.
That happened.
It happened. And the Bucks won. So now they both get to sit and watch and wait and see what happens with the Falcons and Saints today as well. We'll be right back. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Go Falcons.
Back to Andy Bunker and Joe Patrick and the Wade Ford Tailgate Show. Brought to you by Wade Ford, Atlanta's Ford dealer on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. The Wade Ford Tailgate Show here with you on a Sunday morning as the... temperature's rising here down at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Sun's coming up over these the buildings, and the dew that was on the grass is starting to burn off a little bit. You said this at the beginning of the show, Joe. This is probably about as good of a weather day that you're going to get in week 18.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah, and it's going
to
be
to the
real.
Point where it's like, I hope people aren't like deciding to do other things because it's so nice. You know what? Better day.
Spend your Sunday how you want.
I mean, the sun is shining gloriously down on Mercedes-Benz Stadium on the panels, I guess you call them.
Now, I do believe they're going to have the roof closed either way because on a beautiful day in early January still does just mean kind of like mid-60s.
Yeah.
And I think the temp has to be somewhere around like 70 to 70.
Now, if Matt Ryan was in charge,
Yeah.
He was arguing for that when it was raining against the Dolphins. I don't know if that's legal.
That would have been the funniest, like, most frustrated crowd of all time. Like, wait a minute, it's raining on us. We did not expect to be rained on today. What's going on here? That would be hilarious. I don't know. I get it here, especially because it's so damn hot early in the season.
Yeah.
Like, you probably – but, I mean, I don't know. All the colleges around here play – open air stadiums and play really, really hot games and all that. I love an open air natural grass stadium.
You know,
but the trend in the NFL is we see some of the mock ups of the new Kansas City stadium. It's all indoors. It's all artificial turf.
Yep.
They have those big like windows at the end. Everybody's trying to like
everybody loves their windows.
Everybody's trying to emulate. Well, you know what's better than windows?
You know what's funny is I cover Atlanta United as well, and the thing I hear whenever the roof is open, you know, for a summer night or whatever, it's actually the fans that I hear complaining about it being open. It's like it's too hot, it's too muggy, you know. It's like
we are a spoiled lot.
And at the same time, they want to
be
Private Jaws Stadium, you know. None of it makes sense.
Yeah, you're right. you're never going to get
the mind of a fan. It changes.
But it is funny to me though. Just since we're on this topic, we'll get back to the game and some of the other games around the NFL this weekend and last night and all that in just a minute as we get ready for the Falcons and the Saints. It's like the stadiums that get raved about the most, as far as atmosphere and intimidation and noise and whatever history, tend to be college football stadiums, right?
Yeah.
For the most part, I mean, you've got your LSUs, you've got your Ohio States, Michigans, places like
which
that,
are
like
all open air,
all natural grass. And then there's a handful in the NFL: Arrowhead, Buffalo,
the Link,
in Philadelphia,
Mile High.
Like the Mile High, exactly. They're all open air, also. I don't know. Like, this is kind of something about – also, the other thing about it, especially in professional sports, the ones that are most revered tend to be the crappiest. Like
– yeah.
Like, Arrowhead is not a nice stadium.
It's like the third oldest stadium,
but it's
maybe
like
the
it's,
second oldest stadium in the NFL.
Fans kind of take ownership of that. It's like, yeah, it's crappy, but it's our crappy. You
right.
know, it's
yeah,
like your
yeah,
little
yeah,
brother.
Yeah.
I can make fun of him, but you can't make fun of him.
Yeah.
And then, like, growing up in Seattle, the Kingdome was an absolute dump. But we loved it.
Mm-hmm.
It was our dump,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was like those metal trough urinals. Everybody standing shoulder to shoulder. there's no separation. It's awful. It's disgusting. The hot dogs are all steamed and like stuck to the wrapper.
Yeah, but
like,
it builds character.
I think so. Now we got climate controlled everything, and you know, soft seats.
Well. Yeah.
Makes for a soft populace, Joe. Yeah.
It's kind of I'm thinking about the Falcons here, and I mean that's how the Georgia Dome, the old Georgia Dome,
it was
a lot smaller, exactly. You know, on the inside, but it was so loud.
It was loud.
I mean,
it was
those were good teams too that had great playoff games. And by the way, like this always just gets me on like, gosh, we need to have that environment.
Yes.
At Mercedes-Benz Stadium, but you don't get that without a good team
exactly.
That like the fans are proud to cheer on.
I do believe that Mercedes-Benz Stadium would have a great atmosphere for a playoff game.
It'd be insane.
But I don't know because they haven't had one.
Right.
And the stadium's not new. I mean, it's relatively new, but it's not that new.
Yeah.
It's crazy to say that going on a decade now and they haven't played they've only made the playoffs one time since the stadium was built, but it was a road game twice. They played, at L.A. and then at Philadelphia.
LA. Yep.
Someday, hopefully next year.
I thought the atmosphere on Monday night was great against the Rams.
I agree.
You know, it's if you got that plus playoff anticipation kind of layered on top of that, if the team was either still in contention or the team was excited about a team that was going to be going to the playoffs, I think you would have had, obviously, what was there times three or four.
No, I know. I was really impressed with the atmosphere inside the stadium for a number of different reasons. One of them being that we stood here for 2 hours before the game doing this show from this very spot, and there might have been 10 people that walked by.
Yeah.
So I guess everybody parked on the other side of the stadium and went in.
It was cold.
I get it. It was cold. Yeah. It's the week between Christmas and New Year. It was Monday night. It was, the Falcons are eliminated mathematically. Like, there's a lot of factors that played into people maybe not wanting to get here 4 hours early and hang out outside. But again, going into the stadium, I was like, I didn't know what to expect, but it was great. It was loud. Yeah. Tons of Falcons fans. I know Rams fans don't really travel, so you don't have to really worry about that. And it was also a great football game.
I feel like you kind of get a little bit of a different feeling just like fan to fan when you get to this time of year too. You're kind of in that Christmas, New Year's period. It's kind of like a holiday-ish kind of vibe that you just have. I think there's a different level of carefree-ishness that fans have in these last couple games of the season because of the holidays and stuff. So anyway, it was just great to see. And I still have like very distinct memories of the Falcons game. I would say that what really formed me was a playoff game against the Rams at the Georgia Dome back in what would have been 2004, I think this was. It was the Michael Vick era with the Dunvick Duckett. We got the T-shirts. We got, ripped off for $20 by a three-card Monty guy in the parking lot before the game. It was great.
That's how you know the Falcons are good.
Yes, exactly.
The parking lot economy.
Yes.
If you can get a knockoff Falcons jersey for $15 that you shouldn't wash
because
the threads will all come out with the Nike swoosh backwards on it, or you can get ripped off by a three-card Monty guy.
That's what we need back
or
here.
Or you could buy a shot of who knows what from some guy walking around. That's when you know the Falcons are good.
Exactly.
That's what I always talked about early on in my time here in Atlanta, 92.9 The Game, covering the team. It's like, they look pretty good. We'll see. As soon as the knockoff jerseys start popping up in the gas station parking lots, that's when I know they're good. Not yet.
Right.
I don't think there's a knockoff version of these jerseys anywhere in town.
And what's sad is that there's generations of kids who are in the prime of their sports forming memories in life who don't have any memory of this team. Maybe they were alive potentially for the Falcons being in the playoffs, but they don't really have a memory of it. They don't have that experience of going to that kind of game where you feel the electricity, inside the building. That's what the stadium is.
No, it's a shame. And the thing about it is the Falcons have one of those guys right now. I mean, you have a Bijan Robinson who, I don't know, make a list.
Star of the show.
He's in the top five offensive players in the league.
No doubt.
He might be in the top five players.
If the Falcons had a better record, he'd probably be winning Offensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, and if they had an even better record than that, he'd be in the conversation for MVP, potentially. So, I mean, there's a lot of different reasons why you want the Falcons to get this right going forward and not squander another year
so much potential
of your fanhood, but just not to squander another year of Bijan Robinson, because the reality is, it gets late early for running backs, and he's now 3 years in. He's a ton of carries this year, all that kind of stuff. Like, I'm not talking about the end of the road for Bijan or anything, but you're in the prime of it right now. Like, he's better than he's ever been. He's over 2,000 yards already, franchise record, and who knows what he's going to do today. I mean, it wouldn't surprise – I don't know that you could put a number
probably
out there.
Probably 200 yards.
Probably.
All-purpose, probably something like that.
Probably. He'll probably run for 125 and catch.
I mean, it's just normal.
Receive four or five passes for 75 yards. score a couple touchdowns.
Yeah,
he's going to have a play or two that you have to watch on replay because you don't understand how he did it in real time.
Right.
And, like, we were talking about this off the air earlier this week. Like, the Falcons haven't had an individual talent like this since Julio Jones.
Yeah.
Like, he's the single best player they've had since Julio, and he's on the list of most dynamic players we've seen in the league in the last decade. So, yeah, I mean, it's frustrating to have all that, too, and have to be on the outside looking in the playoffs because Bijan's the type of guy that can win you a game, you know? I mean, you saw, if you had it in you to watch it, you saw the Panthers and the Bucks play last night. Those teams aren't good. And I'm not sitting here trying to say that the Falcons are, because if they win today, they have the same record as them, and they're 1-3 against the two teams combined. So this is not a Falcons argument. This is just those two teams, one of the two of them is going to the playoffs. Neither of them have a player like Bijan Robinson.
Yeah.
Like, if the Falcons had just won one of these stupid games.
Even that game against the Jets where we kind of talked about that being
the
killer.
They would control their own fate right now.
At the time when it happened, it was like, all right, well, they're probably already out of it anyways. This one just kind of seals the deal on it. And turns out if they had won that game, they did all the other stuff.
That's the thing. You just have to stay alive, man. Just like last year. Like, with all of the Kirk Cousins frustration and everything like that, like, they finally went to Penix. They beat the Giants. The Bucks helped them out with losing to the Cowboys. And then they played that great game against the Commanders in overtime on Monday night. They lost, obviously. They ultimately did not make the playoffs last year either. But at least the final couple weeks, there was some intrigue as far as what would – think you had the intrigue last year just about, like, all right, here's this top 10 quarterback. What's he got? What's he look like? And he played well enough to get people enthusiastic about the future. Not the case this year, unfortunately.
It's too bad.
If you watched that Panthers and Bucks game last night, God bless you. Good for you.
That thing stunk.
Bucks end up winning 16-14 to force the tiebreaker tonight. The Bucks are rooting for the Saints. The Panthers are rooting for the Falcons, and we'll see how that goes. Obviously, the other game of the night, the Seahawks and the 49ers in Santa Clara were playing for the number one seed in the NFC. And if you didn't know that and just watched that game, it would have been hard to believe that the 49ers could potentially have been the number one seed in the NFC. And I think that's a credit to the team, the coaching job that Shanahan and Saleh have done there. Like, it's insane what they've been able to get with all of the injuries that they've dealt with on that team. Defense looks pretty legit.
Speaking of injuries, have you seen an update on Brock Purdy? Because it looked like on that last sack of the game
his hand was
really swollen up.
Yeah, I haven't seen. I haven't seen. But, crazy thing for them is, all right, Mac Jones went, 3-1 when he started,
four and one.
So obviously Purdy's a better player, but if they have to go to their backup, they've got a guy that's done it a little bit this year as well. So that was last night. The Seahawks will be the number one seed in the NFC for the fourth time in their franchise history. The other three times they've been the number one seed in the NFC, they've gone to the Super Bowl. So we'll see. Sam Darnold also winning 13 plus games back to back years on two different teams is not the stat anybody saw coming. One of five, and the other ones are like Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and I don't know who the other one is, but Mahomes.
He's the only one who's done it on two different teams.
Yeah, he did it on two different teams, which is nuts. And then you got the Ravens and the Steelers. That's tonight.
It's a playoff
Sunday
game.
Night Football. It's a playoff game. Winner
playoff
goes
start early,
and loser stays home. So that'll be a fun one tonight too. As for the rest of the league, it's a little some playoff positioning here and there, but
yeah, it's week 18. You know, you got some dead rubbers, some slightly interesting games.
Yeah, I'm trying to look.
Like Packers, Vikings, nothing really on that necessarily. Yeah. Titans, Jags,
Chiefs, Raiders. Yeah. That'd be terrible. Titans, Jags. Yeah, Jags are like your favorite by two touchdowns in that game. Yeah, I mean, there's some seeding implications in some of those games, but the two games that have playoff implications are the Ravens and the Steelers, and the
Falcons
and the Saints.
I mean, like, look at the four o'clock slate.
Oh, dude, there's
like
so
games.
Many. There's so it's the end. This is the NFL's nightmare. Like, there's so many games today that don't really make a difference and are quarterbacked by guys you've never heard of. Like, it's not what they want.
Yeah.
That was a look around the NFL brought to you by Hatfield Better Pork. Head to simplyhatfield.com I do also want to encourage you to stay tuned later today for the Ticketmaster Halftime Show, brought to you by Ticketmaster, the official ticket marketplace of the Atlanta Falcons. We'll come back with hour number two on the Wade Ford Tailgate Show. Joe has us an injury update, so stay tuned for that right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.